Musician Josh Ritter knows his way around words. In 2006, Paste magazine named him one of the 100 greatest living songwriters for works like this one, Girl in the War, off his acclaimed 2006 album, The Animal Years.
Peter said to Paul, you know all those words we wrote are just the rules of the game, and the rules are the first to go.
Well, songwriter Josh Ritter occasionally drops the song part and just writes. And in a review for Ritter's 2011 novel, Bright's Passage, no less than Stephen King compared his writing to Ray Bradbury's. Well, Josh Ritter's latest novel's out this week. The title, The Great Glorious Goddamn of It All, that's not a curse, it's kind of a prayer. Something a character says in the forests high above the fictional timber town of Cordelia, Idaho, when confronting a glorious cliff that, as Josh writes, bears a Mackinac of green trees and granite hanging from some invisible coat hook in the heavens. That's the land Weldon Applegate, a 13-year-old from a line of famous lumberjacks, is struggling to keep in his family. It's a story that spans the last century as it's told through the eyes of that same kid, Weldon, at the age of 99. Josh Ritter, what a ride. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much, Robin.
It's set in Idaho. We know you're from Idaho, but still have to ask, where did this story of turn of the last century logging come from?
Well, it came about as a kind of a recombination of a bunch of things. One of the main ones being just growing up in northern Idaho in the trees and being surrounded by the kind of ghosts of this early logging, you know, these old like logging roads. You know, they were so beautiful in these old timber towns. It felt like there was a magic there that I missed, and I wanted to write about it.
Well, in fact, in the afterword, you thank your parents for their decision to live in northern Idaho. The magic of that place has shaped my life, you write, and you're just now beginning to understand it. So you plummet in this story. What did you have to do that? Because, well, you get to say things like, Weldon Applegate's family is so deep into jacking, lumberjacking. Cut those men, they'll bleed pine sap. It's colder than an icicle with frostbite. Where'd you get the language? And where'd you get the knowledge that pack mules, their ears were painted white so the lumberjacks could see them against the dark of the woods?
Weldon Applegate was a voice in my head that had probably always been living there, and I started to listen to him. And there were just things that he would say that no one else would. And I started really paying attention to him and to his words, and I feel like I could think about him as separate from me. The same with Cordelia, Idaho, and the St. Anne region was a place that I wrote about so much and edited so much that it became a real place in my mind. And so there were things that people did that made sense, and the place had its own ecosystem.
It's so interesting that you say that this character became a voice in your head, because in your last book, Bright's Passage, your character literally has a voice in his head. And in that case, yes, it's a young man coming back from World War I. But, you know, as Stephen King pointed out in his review of that book in the New York Times, you've always done this in songs. Getting ready to get down, it's parents worrying that their little girl is getting too wild, so they send her to a Bible school. That becomes a song for you. Or, you know, I think it's Another New World. An
yes.
Explorer is on his way to the North Pole. It sounds like you've got a crowd there in your head.
I really am fortunate that I feel like I used to think, well, you run out of stories and then you stop, you know? Now I start to think that it's more of like a natural well, and those things just kind of come up and you grab them when they surface.
Well, describe a little more of this. I mean, I love Idaho, and, you know, this part that you're talking about, this deep forest. Describe what you feel there, and then what you found out again about, you know, these wooden chutes that would take logs down off the mountain. Yeah. But if something went wrong, that log would shoot off the chute and could kill 20 men. I mean, describe those woods.
Well, the area which I based the St. Anne River Valley on is the St. Joe. And it's a beautiful area of white pines, and a huge logging industry was there throughout the last century. And so when I was on the road playing music, you know, living all over the place, I gravitated in the bookstores towards books on local history. And especially in the Northwest, I would find books about logging lore. It was like reading about the place that I had grown up with, but it was infused with a magic. that I hadn't seen as clearly as I did when I was separated from that place by thousands of miles.
Yeah. Well, we've all, you know, even if you didn't grow up in that area, you've grown up with the mythology, you know, Paul Bunyan.
Yeah.
We all have that sense. And you have a character, Lyndon Loughlin, who starts off in young Weldon's eyes being the best jack ever. He could kick a ceiling with spiked boots, 7 feet tall, 3 rows of teeth. You know, that kind of mythology. Turns out to be not a great guy. But is this the kind of thing you're talking about? Like taking the Paul Bunyan or whatever you were reading and transposing it into a character?
I found in a lot of these used bookstores, these old oral histories, and I learned what I know about lumberjacking from these books and then from just walking around in those woods. And, you know, I wanted Lyndon Loughlin to be the epitome of a lumberjack in his skill and his strength. But I also feel like I wrote this book during a period of our history when bullies were ascendant. And Lyndon Loughlin is a bully. And in the end, he's like every other bully. Without giving too much away.
As Weldon Applegate, again, the 13-year-old and the 99-year-old, both the characters are here in this book, as he says, I think that sometimes having these enemies, these mortal enemies, is what keeps you going.
And I love that.
Yeah, he has more than one. The town, Cordelia, which again you kind of invent, it sometimes empties out when there's no logging, but it always has this haunting score because there's a piano player who plays one song in particular over and over. Yeah. This is a real song that you've recorded. Let's just listen to a little. It's called Some Somewhere.
I love the world, but if I gotta leave it, let me go. Some somewhere where a man is free to roam. Let me loose to wander where a man can be his own. When he's on his own, some somewhere.
Have I got this right, that this is the song that the piano player is playing?
Yeah, that's correct. He caught it like an infection. It was a song that he heard from a man on a mountain pass, and that song had been driving this guy wild, and he passed it on to the next guy, and the next guy, and the next guy.
And now to us. What are you saying here? I mean, I hear that these characters making their way to books, and maybe these notes are at mortal combat for your head. Is that what happens with songs, too? You just can't get them out of your head?
Oh, they are. There's the creativity, and you get a whole bunch of stuff, and it ends up in the attic, and you've got to get it down under the street. You just have to empty your attic. But getting them out is, you know, getting the song out of your head, you have to sing it to get it out. And it's the same with writing, I find.
Well, with your 13-year-old character, your protagonist, Weldon, you know, we follow him into the woods. It is transporting. We are there. It takes you away from a lot of the current headlines to a place in Idaho we could only imagine, but we're there. You also bring us to his near deathbed at 99. And that Weldon Applegate, again, the 99-year-old, now in the late 1900s, says he keeps being asked, what was it like back then? What was it like? Did you ask an older person that? Or is that you also asking?
I've asked, you know, my grandparents versions of that question. And I've also been in the bar in Troy, Idaho, and watching somebody who had been sitting there. It looked like the bar had been built around them, you know, and they had stories. And I never talked to that guy, but I thought about him a lot when I was working on this book because I needed someone to imagine. So many of the questions that I feel like people ask Weldon, I want to know the answers to as well.
So Josh Ritter, what do you want people to think about this book as they approach it?
When I recorded Bright's Passage as an audio book, and I read it, and as I was reading it, I thought, well, this is really fun, but I would like to have more fun stuff to read. And I thought, well, I'm going to write a book that's really rollicking. I want it to have it be fun, and I want it to be profane and witty, and I want it to have some empathy in it. And I just want to have some real antagonists. So that's what I set out to do with Great Glorious Goddamn. I wanted it to just be like a rodeo.
Ah, a bucking bronco rodeo. Josh Ritter talking about his new novel, The Great Glorious Goddamn of It All. Josh Ritter, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so exciting and fun.